Sorrel County Board of Equalization. We'll first be hearing account number R816-3683, Blue Rhino Investments Incorporated. The petitioner has previously been sworn in. I suppose that that would still stand. And Kevin, you are already sworn in. And I wonder if we could forego the reading of the all of this.
I'm willing to forego it.
That's great. That's so let's go ahead and get started. And do you have any more information?
I don't.
And just what we have in our packet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Kevin does a nice job, so we can just rely on his information.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the deal with this building of the is similar to the other two in that we bought it using 1031 money, and then we have incurred significant vacancy. So we bought it, I think, in November of 2015. Isn't that right? And essentially what happened is that we thought that we could lease out the first floor when the tenant moved out, because the tenant was consolidated. It's a doctor's office, so they went ahead and consolidated. But we actually just basically straight changed the strategy, got Edward Jones in there. This was about 14 months or so after we bought it. Edward Jones hasn't quite moved in yet. So we completely underestimated the market and as far as what the vacancy would be at the time would be to fill it. And in doing that, we also made wrong projections on the rents, so we overestimated what we could get as far as rent goes. And then we ran into a problem with parking, because there's some sort of a shared parking arrangement. I don't want to get into all that, but it's kind of a nightmare parking situation over there. So we feel that the property should be valued on an income approach and not just on the sales price alone. And I generated a price on my petition of $919 using, some basic income approach type of principles. So that's essentially the summary.
Did the building sell in December of 15 or December of 16?
It is 15.
Okay, so the report said 16.
Yes, okay. That's incorrect.
Thanks.
Yeah, and so, before we bought that building, we did a bunch of research. We had appraisers, say, oh, the market's strong, you'd be able to get another medical tenant. We tried for, again, like a year, and we couldn't get a medical tenant. Hospital is sucking everybody out of the buildings into their medical facilities. And, that's just kind of the way it goes. Sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. And so we haven't held the property off the market with the intention of remodeling or anything like that. So that wasn't the situation at all. So we actively tried to lease it during that whole entire time period. And we still have quite a bit of vacancy. Edward Jones is moving in, but we still have probably about 25% vacancy.
So this is the one that...
Yeah, which building is this?
This is the Smokestein and Steamboat Medical was in?
No, this is the one that Tampa Valley Women's Group was in. It's, do you remember the carpet shop used to be on Pine Grove?
It's right next to the H&R Block.
It's
I don't know where
that's
at. Oh, okay, I do. Oh, okay, thank you. I know where
that's at. Yeah, it's next to... Mountain Resorts took over the building in the middle, and that is where that carpet shop used to be. You familiar
right.
with that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the problem that we
Isn't that where American Fundware used to be? I think that's...
Yeah, I don't know.
In the day.
It's a nice enough little property. The challenge is the cross-parking arrangement. And since Mountain Resorts is in there, they have a tendency to overburden the parking lot, as you can imagine. And there isn't any way to prevent them from doing that, essentially. And so we had to work out some arrangement with Mountain Resorts. But anyway, so we've done that now. Well, actually with the landlord of Mountain Resorts. Yeah, so that's pretty much where we're at.
Any questions?
How did you come up with the 900 then?
Using an income approach, just using the rents, calculating the rents, 7.5%.
So I'm not sure that in my packet I'm seeing good detail of your cost approach.
Well, so I used...
He didn't use the values, he used...
Of your income.
Yeah, well, I used the 275 a foot originally based off the square footage, because the square footage that the assessor had was wrong. So I applied 275 a foot, and that gave me 919. And then I used an income approach using an 8% cap, and I came up with a value of 363,589. Or, I don't know, that could be 363. That's got to be 963. That must be wrong. I just got a typo there. And so, effectively speaking, the property is worth somewhere in the range of what I suggested, the 919, 950, somewhere in that area. And Kevin and I talked extensively about this, so, you know, we...
So, who's the exempt? Is that it?
The exempt is now, is the state. The state has a, like a water board in there.
They do.
So is that where Emma, is that where Erin's office is?
No, she's still in the old Pine Grove.
That's what I thought.
Honestly, I don't know, because I have a manager on that. So, but the state just has, so now we divide it up into these little offices. So we have a state in one of the small offices,
okay.
Individual offices.
I'm fine. Kevin?
Okay. I wanted to start off by letting you know there is an error in the report relating to the one on the first page. The intent of this paragraph on the first page or this line is just to inform the reader that there was a purchase price close to what we have it valued at during the period, during the data collection period. And I usually summarize that at the end of the report. On page, let's see, it would be on page 7. There's a paragraph below the final estimate of value and the CAMA system value. This is
I was going to ask
another
about that.
Another property, and I do apologize. So that is incorrect. But the data that was supposed to be here is actually encased here in the front page.
So in other words, your report, we just eliminate that note, that entire paragraph, and it doesn't affect any of the other conclusions.
No.
That was just a note.
Right.
Okay.
And but the point that I was trying to make or make you aware of is that it did transfer during the period for $1,275,000. And in talking to Mr. Kergel, there were several deductions off that sale price. I had one for $25,000 for roof repairs, an atypical broker credit of almost $32,000, and another $10,000 for some kind of an incentive. I wasn't aware of what that was. So
that's
the adjusted sale price was, as far as we were concerned, the assessor's office was $1,208,000. And I've done what I've done on other reports here, where I've done just an estimate of value based on the cost approach, and I'll just go through it quickly. The cost approach indication was right about where that adjusted sale price was at $1,206,500. I've also done just a brief sales synopsis of the sales throughout Steamboat Springs that I deemed to be most similar or reflective of value for this subject property.
Is the subject property included in that graph?
It is. It's,
which one is it?
Yeah, if we're on page 4, it's the one that's highlighted in the rust color.
That's the subject
yes.
property.
Yeah. And I'll go ahead and talk a little bit about that quickly. There were a number of sales that we had during the period, but of those, there weren't many office-type properties that had transferred. And within the office category, there were both condominiums, of course, and standalones. And this grid does include both, just because of the nature of the type of property it is.
I know. This
is no reflection upon your petition.
Yeah. Do you have hay on the ground, Doug?
Well,
do you have hay on the ground?
It has some reflection on my hay.
Okay.
Is it snowing or raining?
It just looks like rain.
Yeah, it's heavy rain.
But what I was looking at in the selection of sales for this particular property is what do we have in the way of newer, better quality office units that are standalone properties, and there really weren't very many. I do have three sales selected here. Sale number three is the old Heman Law Office building out on West 40. As you go past East Hardware, it would be on the, I guess, the south side of the highway. And I was really looking at that one as very similar, just in its construction style and utility as an office property and the quality and so forth. And the fact that it is a standalone property on a quarter of an acre, but its location is obviously in a very different location. But as far as commercial properties go, we're in Steamboat, and it certainly was one that I think was notable that should be looked at. And it sold for $372,000, and that is the time and distance sale price. $372 a square foot, and that is the time adjusted sale price. Another one I was looking at is a condo unit, comparable number two. Again, I'm on page four on the grid, and there was a unit inside the medical center that sold for just under $400 a square foot. And I do realize it's in the medical center. It is a condominium. It's not a standalone. Its square footage is somewhat smaller than the subject as far as its rentable square footage. It's at, you know, $400 a square foot. And then there were a couple of units in a blanket sale that sold in the resort group building just southeast of the Central Park area, or actually probably within Central Park. The two units combined, they're 5,708 square feet of leasable space. And they sold for a price of $420 a square foot. And again, they are condominiums, they're not a standalone. But in looking at that and then taking into consideration the sale price of the subject property at $335 a square foot, I believe that the sales that were available during the period support the sale price of the subject property, and therefore its market value that we have it assigned at. If we go to page six, I have the income approach again, and to the top of the page, Steve had provided income information in the rental survey that we put out every fall before the reappraisal, and this is just the summary of what I got back from him. And as you can see, it capitalizes very low, and I think he was really looking or putting his actual vacancy into it for that year, or
that's great.
18 months. So I just wanted you to be aware of that. On the right is the capitalization that I did based on the data that I have collected. And the income approach on this does come in lower than what the sales comparison and cost approaches come in at. I was at $1,022,958. And I believe that's a result of some of the data that I had gotten. I have several categories. One of them is the mountain area, and a lot of it is based on some of the stuff around the Torian and so forth, around Clock Tower area. What I did was, you know, noted the location of the subject being in a little bit better area, and I was kind of doing a melting of some of the income I had downtown along with what I had up in the mountain area. But I do believe that the income approach is somewhat indicative. However, as far as an appraiser, I'm looking at the sales comparison approach and the fact that it did sell during the period. So my recommendation is just a final estimate of value based on the sales comparison approach to uphold the $1,280,560.
Questions of Kevin?
I don't have any questions.
I guess the kind of the standard question I would ask is, you seem a little less confident of your sales comparables in this particular instance than you have in the past.
Okay. With the sales that occurred during the period on this particular property, we're looking at office. I'm looking at office, the office category. And from that, there weren't a lot of standalones. There were more of the condominiums. So unfortunately, I'm having to look at both built types of office properties, condominiums and standalones. And when you do just look at standalones, I mean, I think on this grid, there was really just the subject property and Hammond Law Office building, the one up on 40. So it, in that way, it is limited. However, I feel like it's still safe to look at the condominiums and say, and also take into consideration the actual sales price and the TASP of the subject. So I guess in that way, if I sounded a little less confident, that would be the reason.
Okay. Fair enough.
So, I would like to just assert that, yes, the building may have been worth that the day we bought it, but then it was worth a lot less when we had the vacancy. And so you need to evaluate. If we're trying to evaluate it as of, the end of June, which is the end of the assessment period, we were literally at about 66% vacancy at that time. And, I'm agreeable to using the direct cap value that Kevin came up with, which is $1,022,958. But it seems to me like if your goal is to determine what the value is as of a certain date, that's why you're applying the tax adjustments and so on and so forth, that at the same time you have to take into consideration significant changes at the property that would change the value at that time. And so, with 66% vacancy, you could argue that it was worth even much less than what I suggested it was worth from the petitioner's perspective. But again, it's that date that's important. It doesn't mean that it won't be worth what Kevin is suggesting 6 months from now or a year from now when it's full. But at that date, it wasn't worth that.
So there's always a little question there. Gary sat here and told us the other day it's really the value that it's on January 1st based on the value of the 2 years ending June 30, 2016.
Well, yeah, my understanding, as working for the assessor's office is it really is at the value is as of the effective date, the June 30th, 2016. However, the class or the state of the property as of January 1 is what we're focused on. So still really the value is of as of that June 30th, 2016.
I don't think I understood what you just said.
Well, that's why I was good.
Okay. We have the two dates, and the actual value on a given property is based on that effective date of June 30th, 2016. And in the simplest scenario, if the property was to change in its classification to residential, or it was res and went to commercial, or
So then it would be the effective date of January 1st would still have the value at June 30th.
Based on that sales period ending on June 30, 2016.
So the sales period ends on in 2016 on June 30th, right? But the property, so if there's vacancy that occurs before then, does the value change based on that vacancy?
In the appraisal realm with, my peer group, fee appraisers, they're going to look at the actual rentals and vacancies and expenses and so forth on the property. I mean, that's always considered. But also, they look at the market as to whether or not the income, expenses, and vacancies, all of that information is stabilized, meaning that there's no adverse issues going on, that what we're looking at the time is pretty normal, what you'd expect to see with the general body of income properties in a given market. So then when you have a subject property that is completely different, like in this case, the vacancy reads really high, well, my understanding is that the market in that area at the time really was nothing like what the subject is showing. So then you ask, is there an adverse issue about it that's out of the norm of the market? And with this property overall, generally I'm saying no, there is not. I know Steve has a concern about the association and the parking issue, and that was a deterrent to some of the new tenants. However, historically, it hasn't had a vacancy issue, to my knowledge.
One doctor's office.
Yeah.
That's why it didn't have a vacancy issue. It was just one doctor's group.
That's not true. My husband was in there, and he wasn't with Yampa Valley Women's Center.
But
they rented to other doctors. It wasn't one group.
According to my understanding, it was Leslie and Brad owned the building, and they had one doctor's group that subleased from them, including their particular space as well. At least that was how it was explained to us. If they were leasing out the different doctors, I don't
know. I understand the date, but you really do have to look at a period, right? I mean that's really the appraisal period, and the reason is because if it were really on one date and I were a commercial property owner, it would behoove me to clear out my building in June every
Kick
other
all my
year,
renters out.
Do my renovations that I would have planned, and then bring people back in. So it really, I mean, you have to look at property specific, but you also have a period, and you have to look at kind of what the peer group is getting, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
What the price
yeah.
per square foot is on the market
yeah.
for office space.
Yeah, but that key date, I mean, it really is key that you're looking at the effective date of value. And that would be the June 30th, 2016.
Okay.
And in Rapp County, you know, we use the 24-month leading up to that. So
we got a feeling here? You got a place? What place you want to go with this?
I don't know.
I mean, I was going to make the comment that I might be comfortable with the assessor's income approach, which is a lower number.
That ran through my mind, too.
Given the lack of sales comparables that are as robust as what we've used to saying that the $363,000 is just not applicable in my mind in this particular case, but I could support the $1,023,000.
Mr. Chair, regarding account number R8163683, I move that we deny the appeal and valuation requested, but we adjust the value down to $1,023,000.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it.
So that come in straight here?
It will ring.
And then how do I answer? There'll be a place that says answer and I can get... There's questions of competence here. At the...
If it rings, don't touch it. I'll do everything.
Okay.
You can't miss it.
Yeah. Have you been sworn
yeah.
in?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll go ahead and start our 3:30 p.m. item as the Rapp County Board of Equalization. Account number R8170450. We have attempted to call the petitioner, and hopefully he'll have the opportunity to call back in. In the meantime, we have Robin David from the assessor's office. So, Robin, why don't you go ahead and make your presentation. We have in our packet the information from the petitioner, which I guess we'll discuss. But go ahead and do your presentation first.
Okay. So, initially during the 2017 reappraisal, this unit at Sunray Meadows, Unit 807.
Actually, let me, just for the record, interject that the petition or the assessor has arrived at a value for this property of $355,510. The property owner is estimating a value of $286,827.
Yes, that's what I have as well.
And maybe on behalf of the petitioner, can you summarize what their position is on this?
Well, when the property was valued and they received their notice of value, they sent back in their assessor level appeal just a statement saying that they felt that the property.
Can you read it?
I can't read it.
I know. I was going to ask you, how do you guys, what do you do when you get these?
Yeah, I can't read that. We can't read their handwriting. Can you?
Well, this one that I have is from the assessor level form. And so I think I can read the other one. But on the assessor level appeal, the form that they put, it says, I believe that the property is overvalued based on comps. And he did send in three comparables for me to take a look at. And those comparables, one was of similar size to his property. One was a deed-restricted unit, so it really wasn't reflective of what the market conditions were. And the other one is a much larger unit. So
So this is not a deed restricted unit?
His is not, no. No. So in looking...
And did he arrive at an average cost per square foot?
He arrived at a value of $286,827.
Did he arrive at that based upon a cost per square foot, or...?
I am not exactly sure how the valuation came, because these properties, he has a sales price of $275,000 for one of them, for the one that's similar size. The deed-restricted property sold for $355,000. And then the one that's larger than his sold for $320,000. So
it's not
it's not even an average of those three numbers. Average of the three.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure how he arrived at the value. I believe that he was looking at the sale that was similar in size to his, and assuming that his value was somewhere close to that.
Okay.
So I looked at those sales, and I did pull up the sales that we had that were similar size to his property, and we had 9 of those sales. And you can see in that grid that I provided, with all the blue highlighted sales, those top 9 sales were the ones that are similar in size to his. And so I looked at those.
What's the meaning of the blue highlight on your spreadsheet?
Are you talking about this one here?
Yeah. What?
So this dark blue one represents the sale at the end of the time period.
Oh, okay.
So that's the most recent sale.
Okay. And that's true in all three of those categories?
Yes.
Okay.
So when I looked at those sales, I still felt like that valuation of $365 a square foot was supported based on the sales information that I had. And then as well as taking out the deed-restricted unit that he had looked at, taking out the unit that was much larger than his that would have been in a different valuation tier, I denied his appeal initially because I still felt like that valuation was supported based on those sales. That's when then I did get this other document that you guys are referring to. And I believe that it says these units are close to the... I have no idea what that says. Something time of number 807, which is his unit. I question the 20% increase in assessor something value.
Current value,
maybe?
Yeah, that's probably it.
I don't know how you guys do
this.
I read some of these, and I can't read the handwriting at all.
I do not believe that the market...
Data,
thank you, supports such an unrealistic increase. So, again...
Where's the 20% coming from?
So his property, he's talking about the increase from the prior reappraisal, which is $272,720, and an increase to $355,510.
Okay.
So he's talking about that increase, and that's over the 2 years. So when I did receive this other document, that's when I did select some comparable sales, and I went through those comparables and looked at them. And this is very similar to another Sunray Meadows that we had come up with the valuation for as well. And so in using the 4 comparables that I have, comparable number 1 is the one that sold right at the end of the time period, and that one sold for... $344 a square foot, or $334,690. And then I did pull some other comparable sales that were similar to his unit in size. And in the end valuation, when Gary and I had discussed this, we had elected to put 50% of the weight on the most recent sale, and then 50% of the weight using the other comparables, because we didn't want to put all of our weight on just one sale alone. So in that calculation came up with the valuation of $353.50 a square foot, or adjusting the valuation to $344,310. But I feel like that valuation is still supported, even though, I mean, I don't feel going down to the valuation that he's requesting.
So we don't have that other number, 344 what?
It's on the last page of my report.
Next page.
Oh.
Turn the page.
Yeah.
There you go.
On the very last one.
So I guess I'm a little concerned. So you're throwing out a big effect of the last sale at 344.
No, I'm not throwing it out. I'm using 50% of my weight on that one sale.
But it ends up being more than what the last sale was by even 50%.
I mean, I think to Doug's point, it appears that for whatever reason, it's kind of surprising that there's a downward trending over time, over the 2 year period. Interestingly,
are all those, they're all pretty comparable too? I mean, two beds,
all of
two
them,
baths,
yes, all those have garage. Two bedroom, two bath, and they're less than 1,000 square feet. So those are the most similar to his property.
I don't know, guys. The median of those four comparables is 361 with an average of 358. And they're recommending lower than the median or the average.
Even with the downward trend, because you have to consider everything on the sales.
Well, I have to consider all the sales and even putting half the weight on that most recent sale.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that your work on this makes sense. And I think the petitioner has failed to present any kind of compelling evidence that would cause me to second guess your methodology.
Mr. Chair, I move that the valuation for account R8170450 be adjusted downward to $344,310 or $353.50 a square foot.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you very much. Off again. Okay, so we're here for our 3:45 p.m. item, account number P02544242, Walmart Stores Incorporated. We have with us Kathy Hutchinson from the assessor's office. Have we sworn you in yet?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do that. Do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I do.
Very good.
I don't think we need to read the rest of it.
No, I won't read the rest of it. So what do we have today, Kathy?
We have, as you said, P02544242, a Walmart retail store. Walmart's original value with the assessor value is $1,614,510, which we did not adjust at the assessor level. Walmart is stating additional obsolescence due to physical and economic obsolescence not considered in valuation. So in essence, they are protesting the tables, which are used by the state DPT, which in Rout County, all personal property is valued in accordance with Colorado law, using the tables provided by the DPT. They have asked for administrative denial.
So where's this going after that, then? All of them, or so is everybody getting an administrative denial?
Set it up.
So they're going to have a champion cause there for once. Hopefully not us. So
right, mostly the metro stores. I argue that our store, much the same as the previous Safeway discussion.
Yeah.
I don't find it in my area. And I can't do anything but use the state tables provided by the Department of Taxation.
So. Well, I think we should accommodate these people.
You don't want a discount on it?
No, with the administrative denial.
Oh, wonderful. You had me concerned there for just a moment.
Mr. Chair, regarding account P02542, move that we deny that appeal and affirm the value of $1,614,510.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Very good. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Here in order to get going. First of all, we're here for the account number R324596 property, the appeal of the assessor's valuation. The first thing I need to do, Mr. Swindle, is I need to swear you in. So do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I do.
And Kim, I guess since you're here and the opportunity is for you to make comments, I'm going to swear you in as well.
Sure.
Do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I swear.
I need to cover a couple of introductory items for the record. So, number one, the issue of today's proceeding is property valuation for assessment purposes, not property taxes. No discussion of taxes will be allowed. Two, the assessor's office must produce information to support the basis and amount of the assessor's valuation of the property. Three, where the comparable sales method is used, state statute provides that the assessor will determine value based on sales during the 18-month period ending June 30th, 2016. Sales may also be considered in six-month increments immediately preceding the 18-month period up to 5 years. If there are insufficient sales to obtain accurate comparable valuation data, smaller counties commonly use a 24-month period in order to obtain sufficient comparable sales data that better demonstrates the change in value from the prior level of value, June 30th of 2014. The 24-month period also eliminates seasonality from the sales data. Rout County uses a 24-month data collection period. The petitioner and the assessor should not discuss sales post June 30, 2016, except in cases when it can be demonstrated that a contract for sale was completed prior to June 30, 2016 and closed after June 30, 2016, according to the original contract. Under Colorado law, the present value of your property cannot be considered. Four, the petitioner shall present his or her evidence first and shall have the opportunity to cross-examine the representatives from the assessor's office after they have presented their evidence. The decision of this board may be appealed, and we will refer to that after the decision has been made. If either party has any exhibits they wish the board to consider, please give them to the secretary for marking. So the question there, Mr. Swindle, was there any other written documentation you had to present that we had not already received in our packet?
I don't believe so. I emailed the materials on Friday, and there has been, so it's a 12-page submission, and there hasn't been anything subsequent to that. So that would be the entire, if you have the 12 pages that I sent on Friday, then that would be it, yes.
Yes, we do have that. So, Mr. Swindle,
okay.
If it's time for you to go ahead and make your presentation, please.
Okay.
And just bear in mind, we only have about 15 or 20 minutes for this entire hearing. So as quickly as you can get through your information, that would be best. Thank you.
Sure. All right. Well, first, I appreciate everyone's time and allowing me the opportunity to present my position on this matter. I think the first thing that I would like to do in the materials that I submitted, toward the back, it is page 10 and 11. It is a document that says at the top, November 2016, 2017 land valuations, and it says Treehouse Lewis and Treehouse Street subdivisions.
Yep.
We got it.
Okay. I don't know exactly what the name of this document is. I mean, it looks to me like it is an analysis of the Treehouse subdivision that was prepared by the assessor's office. But again, it doesn't have a title, but that is the document that I'm referring to, and I believe that this was prepared by the assessor's office.
Yeah, it's signed by Susan, the assessor.
Okay, good. My version has her name at the bottom, but I didn't see a signature. If you go to page 2, and again, I guess I should tee this up. The subject property is lot 92 in the Treehouse subdivision. And if you're standing on Highway 40 looking at Treehouse, it would be in the lower to mid-right portion of Treehouse. And it is an undeveloped vacant lot that sits between two existing homes. So in looking at this, the subject property is 0.4 acres. And again, it sits in the mid to lower portion of Treehouse. So I call your attention on page 2, excuse me, it says tier 2, And basically, the assessor's office has divided Treehouse into Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3. And Tier 1 are the inferior lots. There were a few sales of those during the subject period, but because I would acknowledge that they're inferior lots, I'm not even going to discuss those. But if you look at Tier 2, Tier 2, by the assessor's own report, says typical lots, lots located within the midsection of the subdivision, lots are elevated with views of the ski area, and then it says lot sizes typically, it says typical range from 0.3 to 0.7 acres and a base assessment value of $250,000. Now, my position is that my lot should be assessed at $250,000. So if you look at the assessor's own parameters, clearly it says lots typically range from 0.3 to 0.7. My lot is 0.48. It says lots are in the midsection of the subdivision. Lots are elevated with views of the ski area. So I think it's clear by the placement of the lot and the size of the lot that the lot would be a Tier 2 lot within Treehouse. And the subject sort of base valuation is $250,000, which is exactly where I think my lot should be. If you look at Tier 3, right underneath, it says superior lots, typically either larger lots. Okay, well, it says at Tier 2, 0.3 to 0.7 is the typical Tier 2, so I assume that it would be larger than 0.7, which it is not. And then it says some lots located higher in elevation. Clearly, the subject property, again, is in the low or maybe the mid-level. It is definitely not in an elevated position in Treehouse. So I think even by this own report, it is not a Tier 3 lot. It is a Tier 2 lot. And if you look under Tier 3, it says at the bottom, right underneath the Tier 3 category, it says lots often exhibit attributes of more than one tier. In these cases, lots are assigned to the tier containing the most dominant characteristic affecting value. So again, if you look at that report, clearly on the size, it's right in the middle of 0.3 to 0.7. And it is at best at the midsection to the lower section of Treehouse. So I think it's clearly dominant Tier 2. And it's a $250,000 base assessment through that report. And I think that that is the correct number. So that is the first item to look at. And I guess I'll just pause for a second before I move on. If anyone has any questions on that, I would be happy to address them.
No, I think we're okay. We may have some questions of Ms. Sigson when she makes her presentation on that issue.
Okay. Okay. Well, if anyone has any, obviously I can't see you guys, but feel free to raise any questions. The next thing that I would say, you know, the assessor's report and the one that they filed sort of in opposition to mine cite two properties on the other side of Highway 40. And I would say that, you know, the best comparable would be those in the same geographic area as the subject property. And in this case, we not only have vacant lots within Treehouse that sold within the two-year period, we actually have a lot on the same street, a vacant lot on the same street in the same subdivision of Treehouse that sold within that period, and that is Lot 69. Lot 69 is on the corner of Treehouse Drive and William. It is slightly smaller than the subject property, but it is right down the street, and it sold within the two-year testing period for $225,000. So to me, from a geographical perspective, you can't have a better comparable than a vacant lot in Treehouse on the same street as the subject property. Now, again, that property is slightly smaller. I think Ms. Sigson's report did indicate that once a house is built, that the ski area views and the overall views would be comparable to that of the subject property. And it is on the corner, so my property is a little down the street, so that would be an adjustment to value. But I would assert that if you increase the 225 by $25,000, to take those into account, that would be an appropriate additional factor, and that gets you to the $250,000 amount. In fact, the assessor's office report effectively assessed mine at $300,000, which is almost 40% larger than the $225,000 assessment. So, you know, if you look at the fact that it's on the corner and slightly smaller, by the assessor's office own view, it, the ski area views are comparable. I don't think that that justifies a 40% greater assessment on the subject property than the comparable on William William. So that is lot 69. There was another lot, 65, in the Treehouse subdivision that sold in November of 2015 for $285,000. This lot is significantly larger than the subject property. It's 0.61 versus 0.48. In addition, lot 65 is higher up in the Treehouse subdivision, so it has a superior ski area view and overall view. And so, you know, I think that when you take into account the fact that it's a larger lot and it sits significantly higher in Treehouse, you would obviously have to take those as discounting factors. And again, if you only take a $35,000 discount, that brings you back to $250,000, which is effectively the assessment that I think would be the proper amount for that lot. And so I think that actually lot 65 is further evidence, further support for a $250,000 valuation. And in fact, again, it's not only larger but sits higher up, but the assessor's office has assessed my lot at a higher amount than that. So not only did they not say, well, it's a smaller lot and it sits lower, we should have a discounting factor, they've actually assessed my property higher than the larger lot that sits higher within Treehouse.
Bill, can I comment on that lot? I might also point out on that lot that that came with a full set of building plans for a 5,000 square foot home. So there is some additional value, I think, that came with the...
On 65.
On lot 65, yeah.
That's if you like.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you guys have any questions of Mr. Swindle?
No.
So I have a question. Yeah, so it looks like on the map that we have that this is on the outskirts of the subdivision. Is that correct? Is he bordered by...
Yes, there's a cul-de-sac, and there's a house closer to the cul-de-sac, and then the lot, and then the houses that go back on William William toward Treehouse Drive.
So this is a house right there? Mm-hmm. That is a house?
Where?
He's got a house next on either side of
him. Yeah, so there's a house on either side of the subject property,
okay, right.
And the house is borrowed as well. Yep.
That's what I want. Thank you.
All right.
Sure. Just a couple more points. I know I don't want to take too much time, but the assessor's report, again, states that for Tier 2 lots, Whistler Meadows can be used as a comparable. There was a sale in Whistler Meadows for $242,500, which, again, I think ties into the $250,000 proposed valuation that I have put forth. And just two other quick points. One, if you go back to the assessor's November 2016 report, if you look at the bottom, there is a lot 75 that was for sale in Treehouse for $225,000. I realize that's not a closed transaction that can be officially viewed to set the value, but again, that is almost the same size as the subject property, and the amount they were asking is $225,000. So I only point that out because it's just this consistent theme of $225,000 to $250,000. So there we have a vacant lot in Treehouse about the same size asking $250,000. The last thing that I would say is that the assessor has cited two properties on the other side of 40. I don't think that that's particularly appropriate to use raw land on the other side of Highway 40 when you have a number of transactions right in Treehouse with vacant lots. I think that's more probative of the value of the subject property, and I don't see why you would need to go to Fish Creek or to Val d'Isere to find comparables when you have three or four transactions right in Treehouse that supports a value of around the $250,000. So effectively, You know, I think by the assessor's own report that puts tier two lots at a base of 250, the sale on William for 225, the listing for 225, the Whistler lot at 242, plus the lot 65, which is 285. Again, that's a bigger lot, and that's higher up in Treehouse. So I think that I think all of those factors bring you back to a target on the subject property of the 250,000 that was cited in my report. So that, in a sort of a quick summary manner, is my position on that. And I don't know, Kim, did you have anything that you wanted to add?
I don't, Bill. I think that we're the clock is ticking on us here. So
yeah, let's go on to
all right. Susan. Well, I'm done.
Thank you, Susan.
Okay, I guess I'm just going to start by kind of doing a quick rundown on how we do mass appraisal. So we've got thousands and thousands of lots to appraise each year, or every 2 years. So I didn't catch on to this until today, but that narrative that you got, I think, was before I updated that later. But those narratives are kind of, you know, we're trying to value every single lot. And when I went back before setting my values and looked at them on a map, saw how close lot 65 was to the subject lot, and then noticed that it was on a cul-de-sac, I placed some influence factors on all of those lots along the cul-de-sac. And so in the end, the value that I placed on it is what I wanted it to be. It may not exactly coincide with that narrative that you have, Mr. Swindle, and I apologize about that. I didn't realize that was the one that you had. In my updated version, I think I put on a lot of my narratives that a lot of times lots have characteristics of more than one tier. Influence factors are used to place value appropriately in between those two values tiers if necessary. So, like, as you mentioned, Mr. Swindle, there are two good sales in Treehouse that I'll just zero in on, and we won't have to look at the ones on the other side of Highway 40. Lot 69 is the one that's also on William. It does adjoin some HOA land, which is nice, but it is at this corner of William and Treehouse Drive. So everyone that accesses their property on Treehouse Drive has to go by this house. So it's a rather busy intersection. It's kind of awkward the way you have to turn there and everything. So those people deal with a lot more traffic influence. I think that is a factor in the price that it sold for. One other thing I want to point out is that we did measure a trend in the market over the 2 years, and when the assessor's office can measure a trend like that, we're required to apply it. So the sales that I'm looking at were also adjusted from their time of sale to June 30th, 2016. So the time adjusted sales price on that property on lot 69 was $235,800 rather than just the sales price. However, I think the most comparable sale is the sale of lot 65. It had a sales price of $285,000, as you stated, but the time adjusted sales price is $292,980. And in compiling this report, I hadn't caught this before, but when I'm looking at it more closely, I realized that the subject lot and lot 65 in 2007 sold within 4 days of each other. The subject property sold for slightly more than lot 65. So what that tells me is that it's a superior lot, very slightly, but it's the best comparable out there. And
what
so
year
in
was that they sold?
2007.
Okay.
So I'm not looking at those sales prices at all, but I'm just saying that's some good data, within four days of each other, to see that they're very comparable in the market.
And we would probably want to pull what other alternatives the Swindles had at that time, too, because inventory was, everything was flying off the shelves then.
2007, for sure, yeah.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. But, you know, going back to that, I think that does show that they are valued similarly in the market. And then based on that time-adjusted sales price of $292,980, I had the value set at $300,000, which rounds up a little bit. But, yeah, I guess
I'm just zeroing in on that data that I have, and I think the subject lot is superior, most definitely.
What is lot 65 valued at now?
It's actually valued at 312. I looked at that when I was doing this report as well.
And so, I mean, that based on your mass model, even though the time adjusted, it's 292. Mm-hmm. And how do you explain that?
Well, I set the tier.
So they're in
the tier two.
Tier two.
And then there's some influence factors, and this one
pluses
is probably
and
about
minuses and little up bumps. And
that one probably came in, you know, about. I'm trying to do the math in my head, but. You know, maybe a couple of percents too high for that influence factor.
So any comment about the sales price of lot 65 included a set of construction drawings?
Yes. So we want Devana went and grabbed some info for me. And on from all of the info, let's see. The MLS did say that house plans were available to the buyer, but the closing sheet doesn't mention it, and then it wasn't mentioned on the transfer declaration. So I had no way of adjusting for that or knowing about it, really. I have had properties like that in the past where the house plans were offered, but and they got them, the buyers got them, but then in the end decided, well, this isn't the house that we want to build. We want to build our, you know, our own floor plan, and so they scrapped those and did their own anyway. I don't know what the case was here. But.
I think the data of them selling within 4 days of each other, lot 65 and the subject property, with the subject lot being 3.4% more, is pretty interesting data.
Can I comment on that?
Sure, go ahead.
I mean, the testing period for valuation is the two-year period from 2014 to 2016. I don't think you can look back to two sales in 2007, which is 10 years before today, to try to draw some kind of extrapolation of value. I mean, that may be coincidental, it may be interesting, but that's 10 years ago, and I don't think you can say because the lot sold for almost the same within 4 days 10 years ago that bears some relevance on the current valuation as of June 30, 2016.
To respond to that, all I would say is I'm not using the sales to place any value, but we do in the assessor's office, we always are looking at market trends and market data like that to make adjustments. For instance, you know, 10-15 years ago, if we have two sales that are only differing, they're kind of like paired sales that are differing by one little thing, we'll use that data going forward and until the market shows us something different to place any adjustments.
I mean, we've talked a lot about paired sales a lot in this room over the last couple of weeks as developing trends.
Right.
Yeah.
But I would say, again, it sounds like you're trying to extrapolate some kind of comparable value on the lots today based on the fact that they sold for a price close to each other 10 years ago today. And I don't see that correlation.
Well, I guess you and I disagree on that point.
And I don't see the lot 65 being a superior lot to your lot either. So, and again, I guess I'm really concerned that the lot 65 being actually valued at 312. And so I think we're right in the ballpark of 300 myself.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard enough information to persuade me that the subject lot is worth that much less than the comparable.
Especially with the time adjusted, you know, what the time adjustment ends up being about, probably again about a 1% a month, huh?
For vacant land, my adjustment was 0.4% per month.
0.4% per month.
Well, I mean, again, I would say that having the comparable on William at 225, even adjusted to 235, to ratchet that up to 300 based on the fact that it's on a corner, That seems like a significant increase in the assessed value for a lot just down the street from the subject property.
But other than the intersection, yeah.
But on the other hand, it would be a ratcheting down to ignore the, which one was it, 69?
Yeah.
65. Mr. Chairman, regarding account number R324596, I move that we deny the petitioner's request for value and affirm the value of $300,000.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you very much, Mr. Swindle. By the way, you'll be getting a note from our office regarding the decision, and in that note, it will outline your appeal possibilities. Thank you.
Again. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hell of a lot of fun, isn't it?
Thanks, Pat. At least I got to see the process. I appreciate your time.
All right.
Thanks. Thank Have you. A good afternoon.
All right.
And we're ready to move right into yep. our 415 item.
Yeah, it's the corrections.
Generally.
The next three are
I think the next three are corrections.
Okay.
Sure, you can sit with me.
Do you have the last two?
All right. 4:15 p.m. item, Lake Village. Devonna, do you want to walk us through that?
Sure. At the first level of appeals, Steve Caragol, the manager for Yampa Valley Development, and I were going through his appeals, and it was discovered that the subdivision discount was entered incorrectly. We entered the number of lots sold up to the appraisal date, which was June 30th, 16, as 34 lots rather than 36 lots. When we made this correction, it decreases the absorption period from 18 to 17 years and increases the present worth factor from 39.11 to 40.70%. This correction increases the present worth value for all the vacant lots in tax year 2017. At the first level of appeal, going through it with Mr. Caragol, he agreed to that adjustment, that recalculation. We adjusted the 25 lots that he appealed. Now we're asking that the remainder of the subdivision, 44 lots that didn't appeal, have their value recalculated to the correct present worth value. That's the majority of the issue here. We do have additional corrections that we'd like to request. In doing so, if you turn to page 4 out of the 8, that's my spreadsheet. At the top of the page, it shows 4 accounts that the current market value reflects the 2016 protest present worth value override. What that means is that when they protested in 2016, when I made the correction, we put an override into the system. That override stayed for 2017 in error, and so their 2017 present worth calculation was calculated on that last year's present worth calculation, so they got like double dipped.
So they got a double discount.
Right. They got a double discount.
Double discount.
Right. So we would like to increase their current market value to what it should be, not the present worth, and then recalculate the present worth value based on the recalculation. I want to just state one more thing. That first one, Outlot C, that was entered in this spreadsheet in error. It is a drainage parcel. It is valued correctly at the $3,750. It's not a buildable lot. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't receive a present worth discount.
So in my motion, I would want to refer to this page 4 of 8.
Yes, that would be the best.
Okay.
Right, and
right.
Eliminate that first one, the Outlot C, that
okay.
first account number,
okay.
496. And then we're asking that the next three, their market value be corrected, and then their present worth value be corrected based on that recalculation.
So there's 7 total that we're fixing, is that
two,
right?
6. We're not fixing that top one.
Oh, okay.
We're going to remove it. Okay.
And then the next three, during the first level of appeals, or actually at the second level of appeals, Mr. Caragol and I stipulated to a $37,000 value from 39,500 are parcels that are facing the lake. These parcels do not face the lake and should be received a lower value based on sales that occurred.
So you also want to say that this is going to change to 37,000?
Yeah, these right here. Those three.
Oh, these three.
Mm-hmm. You need color, my goodness.
Okay, here, let me give this a try.
Stop okay, one more. Let me just finish real fast. Okay. And then all these other ones, we're not changing the market value, we're just changing the calculation.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, I move that we, when looking at page 4 of 8, that we eliminate the first account number, raise the valuation.
You can't eliminate it, though. We eliminate it.
Like strike it from this
the tax rolls?
Strike it from this motion.
Okay.
We're not wanting to adjust this one.
Okay.
No, it's correct as it
okay.
is.
Okay. So I'll say that the very first exists. Account number, Yampa Valley Development Limited, the top one, Outlot C, is eliminated from my motion. And then I would move that we raise the valuation of the vacant land value for the next three lots erroneously valued at the 2016 appeal override to the corrected 2017 reappraisal market value, to lower the valuation of the vacant land for the next three lots that were placed in a superior valuation tier, and to adjust the present worth value calculation to the corrected present worth value for the remaining 44 lots. Is that right?
That's right. Good job.
Second.
Brilliant. Motion. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Very good.
Yeah.
Let's move on to our 4:20 p.m. item, the Aspen View Estates.
Good
afternoon. Susan, is that you presenting on that?
I think.
Pray tell, what do we have going on here?
So at assessor level appeal, I had an appeal come in from one of these lot owners that said, hey, there was a sale right next door to mine. Why am I valued way higher? And for some reason, I missed that sale. It didn't show up on my mapping. So when I got that appeal, I realized that I adjusted that account based on the sale that I did have.
The appeal. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then there remained three more accounts that I needed to also change because they're pretty much exactly the same. So just requesting that we lower the valuation on these three other lots from $260,000 to $215,000. One of the three is the sale, although they did not steal the valuation.
Mr. Chair, regarding accounts R8167054, R8165077, and R8165101, I move that we adjust the values to those three properties from $260,000 to $215,000.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. And to everybody's tremendous satisfaction, we'll be moving on to our last.
This has got some erroneous influence to it.
Yes, that's
influence. Which is the Vista Ridge Estates. Susan, are you handling this one as well?
Yes.
What have we got going on here?
This is just one where I looked at the sale because someone else in the general vicinity had appealed at assessor level and realized that the value of it was coming in too high compared to the sales price. This was due to an influence factor. I could explain more, but it's just the other one in Trias, that's only a 4%. So it's within 5%, but this one's way off. I don't want to value these two lots at 760 when the sales definitely support the 640. Value, so I just wanted to correct those rather than dealing with them in an abatement in January.
I like it.
I do that one too. So you got the hard one. So, Mr. Chairman, regarding R8179044 and R8179045, I move that we approve the adjustment in value on those two parcels from $760,000 to $640,000.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's my great pleasure to adjourn this meeting of the Rock County Board of Equalization.
That was a pretty good motion on my part.